The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Cruise Radio.
If this whole thing we're going through right now has taught us anything, it is to always have travel insurance. Get a quote today at tripinsurance.com.
Broadcasting from the tripinsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida.
This is
Cruise Radio.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Doug Parker. Thank you so much for checking out this episode of Cruise Radio, a review of Regal Princess today. And as always, Sherry Laskin from CruiseMaven.com is here with Cruise News. Hey, Sherry.
Hi, Doug.
Couple of news stories out of the Carnival Cruise Line camp this week.
Yeah, so on Tuesday, Carnival Cruise Line notified travel agents and guests that the new Mardi Gras and the soon-to-be-refurbished Carnival Radiance arrival dates are delayed into 2021. As a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, the delivery of Mardi Gras to Port Canaveral was pushed back to February 6th of next year. And remember, we've talked about this a million times, Mardi Gras will be the first LNG, liquefied natural gas-powered cruise ship in the Western Hemisphere, and it will also have the first roller coaster at sea. And then Carnival Victory, which will be renamed Carnival Radiance, is still in Cadiz, Spain, awaiting word on when the $200 million dry dock refurbishment will resume. Hopefully, said the cruise line, work will begin again next spring. Carnival is, of course, it's an old routine, notifying passengers and travel agents of all the cancellations and refund or future cruise credit options. Because of the Carnival Radiance delay, the cruise line will then send Carnival Breeze from Fort Lauderdale up to Port Canaveral to take over Carnival Radiance itineraries, and this will begin November 8th of this year, assuming it does start. And also canceled is Carnival Magic's transatlantic and European departures from March 13th of next year through May 2021.
I was going to book that transatlantic on Carnival Magic, and then all these cruises started getting canceled. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to put any more money out there.
Yep, and good luck getting over there.
Yeah, that's true, too. Okay, so let's see here. Two cruise lines, competing cruise lines, have joined forces to develop healthy protocols.
Yeah, so this is interesting. Norwegian Cruise Line and Royal Caribbean are truly strange bedfellows for sure, and they have formed what they call the Healthy Sail Panel. Sail is S-A-I-L, panel. So started nearly 1 month ago, this panel is co-chaired by Mike Leavitt. He's a former governor of Utah under George W. Bush and also the founder of an investment group that bears his name. And the other co-chair is Dr. Scott Gottlieb, and he's the former commissioner of the FDA under the Trump administration. So the goal, along with several noted doctors and PhDs in public health and epidemiology, is to develop a list of health and safety protocols so that they can present this list to the CDC. And of course, the goal is to pass the CDC's requirements so that they can safely begin cruising again. It's also going to be an open source list. So when they have it developed, they're not going to just, you know, sit on it and not share it. So they will share this. And the panel hopes to present their guidelines to the CDC by the end of August.
What was interesting to me is they asked yesterday during the press call why Carnival Cruise Line wasn't involved with this. And they said because that would put too many chefs in the kitchen. But it makes you wonder, Carnival has more ships than both of them combined, so they could give some good data, too.
Yeah, and surprised they didn't say galley.
There you go. Hey-o. And speaking of cruise guidelines, the EU has released some cruise guidelines for cruise lines sailing over in Europe.
Yeah, they have. So the European cruise lines are working with an agency called Health Gateways, and again, is to develop protocols that will enable the cruise lines in Europe to resume cruising. Some of what they hope to put into place may be similar to what might happen here. So here's some of their suggestions, and they're all fairly logical. So the suggestions include wearing masks in many public spaces, keeping enough staterooms empty so that they could isolate up to 5% of passengers if needed. And another idea, and this is kind of interesting, is to allow one person in the pool per 13 feet. Now, I'm not sure how that would work. Recommendations also suggest shorter rather than longer cruises that in turn would limit the number of port calls, right? And then the group also states that there should be plans in place for a partial or complete ship evacuation and the repatriation of all passengers and crew from any port along the way. Now, they're saying onboard activities could be organized by age groups, and they're thinking of scheduled times for dining, embarkation, and debarkation. And this is also already written down. It's recommended, and this is interesting, but I think we've talked about this, Doug, that is that any items in the stateroom that can't be cleaned and disinfected in between cruises should be removed. Mm-hmm. And of course, that would include things like the in-room coffee makers, which are usually pretty yucky anyway, mini bar items, magazines, things like that. And then this is kind of strange. They've suggested that dining might be segregated by having people dine with their group of family members, assuming that everyone's traveling and, you know, and with family members. So I'm not really sure how that would work with solo cruisers. But, you know, all we can do is just wait and see. And, you know, this is what they're putting out there so that Europe can begin cruising.
We're hearing these protocols, guidelines, everything that these organizations are releasing, whether it be the individual cruise lines themselves or these big organizations that are providing guidance. A lot of it is pretty much like common sense, right?
It is.
You would think so.
Yeah. They're just writing down what we all know. I don't get it.
Because, they come out with these guidelines and it's like, okay, there's nothing new here. The only thing that's really new is that you're writing this down now.
Yeah. Instead of saying, well, here's what we suggest. Yeah. And they all have panels. Esteemed doc. And they are people that are brilliant in their field. Yeah. I will give everybody credit for that.
100%. So Royal Caribbean has delayed one of their new ships.
Yeah, they have. And again, nothing new here. Royal Caribbean has just announced that the launch of their new Odyssey of the Seas will be delayed. The new ship was supposed to launch in fall this year, but now the cruise line plans on sometime in April 2021. And according to an email sent by Royal Caribbean, not only has the pandemic impacted shipyard operations, but also the supply chain. So that makes sense. And as a result, all sailings between November 5 and April 17 of next year are canceled. And again, as we've reported before, guests whose cruise was canceled will receive a 125% future cruise credit. And they can also request a refund to their original form of payment. But again, keep in mind that can take up to 45 days at least for the refund to appear. And Royal Caribbean also has this other thing they call lift and shift. So with their lift and shift program, they can keep your money while you rebook your cruise in the same stateroom category as well as the same itinerary and within a 4-week window of your original cruise within a year. So, Odyssey of the Seas is delayed now.
So it seems like these days the ships are either repatriating crew members, they're in cold layup, they're delayed, or they're sold.
Yeah, that seems to be the plan here. So last week we talked about Costa Victoria that was sold for scrap. This week, P&O Cruises sold their 20-year-old ship Oceana. No buyer nor the selling price was mentioned by P&O Cruises. And so it makes you wonder what Carnival Corporation ship might be next. And I have no guess. Maybe you do.
I have no comment. I'll just say dig around for yourself on the cruise broker websites and you'll see what ships are for sale and which ones are leaving. But did you see that Royal Caribbean is getting rid of, or I guess Palmateer rather, is getting rid of both Sovereign of the Seas and Monarch?
Well, I'm partial to the old Sovereign. That goes back for me a long way. I used to work on the Sovereign. So yeah, that would be sad, but and then, next would be Majesty, of course.
Yeah, I can't believe that one's still sailing.
Yeah, that's what I took to Cuba like a month before Cuba was off limits. So
well,
I have great memories from the Majesty.
Yeah, at least someone does. Listener question is from Howard. We have a couple of cruises coming up and we see that California has COVID trending in the wrong direction. Our final payment is due July 14th. while our deposit loss would be minimal because we book the early saver rate, would we get credit for the cruise if it cancels?
Well, hi, Howard. And I just have one question for you. Are you a gambler? So with final payment for you just around the corner, you really need to decide if you are a gambler or would you rather have some cash on hand these days? So the cruise you're referring to isn't scheduled to sail until October. So there is a very small chance it could still depart San Diego in October. You know, who knows? But and the cruise line actually is still sticking with their suspension ending on September 30th. So you can keep that in mind. So my question is, if the cruise does happen, do you still want to be on the very first sailing? Just to repeat, you really have three options, the way I see it. Number one is to cancel before payment and take your $150 hit, which, as you mentioned, was because you booked the early saver fare for three people. Your second choice would be to pay the final payment and hope that the October 4th departure is canceled, in which case you would get 100% future cruise credit. And based on the fact that you have booked a shorter cruise, 5 days or less, you would receive an onboard credit of $300 per stateroom for your cruise. And now there are some contingencies, meaning you'd have to book your future cruise by May 31st of next year for a sail date before April 30th of 23. Or three, you can pay the final payment, and if all is a go, is Bon Voyage in October. Just my thoughts, you know, I'm thinking this is, I think that's very generous of Carnival to offer these stateroom onboard credits based on the amount of days that you're sailing. I don't know how long that's going to last for. Nobody really does. But those seem to be your three options. So, you know, all I can say is best of luck in your decision. Nothing's written in stone if they're going to continue this or not. And, you know, do you want the money now or do you want to just invest it in a future cruise or speculate that you'll get an onboard credit if it's canceled?
Decisions, decisions. Before we hop here, Sherry, what's the weather like in Alaska this summer? Cold, rainy?
It is. You know, the last two summers that I was up here, it was 80 and either cloudy or sunny, but it was beautiful out. And this summer, it's what, July 8th now? I think we've had 3 days of full sunshine where it's gotten above 65 degrees. One day it shot up to 85, and the next day the high was 57 and cloudy and drizzly. You got to remember, this is the rainforest, the Satongas National Forest. And apparently, from what everyone's saying, this is typical summer weather. Drizzly, high 50s, low 60s with an occasional day of sunshine. So welcome to Alaska. Now it's different up north. You know, Fairbanks is dry and sunny a lot during the summer. So it just really all depends where you're located. But
I was thinking of you earlier today when I was leaving the office and I was on 95 South and there was an accident. All lanes were blocked and a half lane was open. And I'm like, I bet Sherry doesn't deal with this stuff up in Sitka.
No, we have one main road. And from the center of town, it's 7 miles one direction and 7 miles the other direction. And then the road ends.
Right.
And
well, there you go.
They have hiking trails at the ends of the roads, but and we're only like what, maybe a quarter, you know, three streets deep from the ocean, and then you go straight up into the mountains. So very small place to live.
Been talking with Sherry Laskin from cruisemaven.com. Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Doug.
If you have an Amazon Alexa-enabled device, ask her to enable the Cruise Radio News skill so you can get daily updates anytime, straight from Cruise Radio.
A big question we get at Cruise Radio is, how do I know if I need trip insurance? Simple answer, if you're getting on a plane, taking a road trip, or getting on a cruise ship, you need to have travel insurance. Hey, it's Doug Parker from my friends at TripInsurance.com. Not only does TripInsurance.com protect your vacation investment, but it also gives you peace of mind in case anything were to go wrong on your trip. How do they do it? They offer three different types of trip insurance policies. Good, better, and best. One policy for every vacation budget. But it doesn't just stop there. They're up to 40% lower when you shop around on other comparison sites. Plus, TripInsurance.com offers 24-hour customer support before, during, and after your trip, online claims assistance, and travel alerts to let you know what's going on at your destination. But find out for yourself. Check out TripInsurance.com.
Check out our blog, the video page, and interact at cruiseradio.net.
So a few months back, Scott went on an 11-night cruise to the Baltic on Princess Cruises' Regal Princess, and he joins us on the line. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Doug. How you doing today?
Good, man. Good to talk to you again, and I can't wait to talk about this Baltic cruise because this whole region is a very seasonal region, so I'm very stoked you got to go over there. Before we get to the Baltics and talk about Regal Princess, let's take a few steps back here. What made you want to take this 11-night cruise? Because you're over, what, on the West Coast?
Yeah, we're in the California area. And so one of the reasons that I wanted to go on this in the first place is at that point, I had never been on a European cruise. So for me, looking for really good deals that were out there and wanting to see what was available, this came up on the radar. And so I was like, okay, well, talk to me about this. We actually found a travel package, which included airfare, a pre-stay at a hotel, all the transfers, onboard credit, and a free balcony upgrade. So, I mean, you can't really go wrong with all of that stuff. So we were really excited about that.
So there was like no logistics on your end. You pre-purchased everything.
No. Yeah. In fact, when we actually arrived in Copenhagen, they literally right when we come off of the airplane and we got to through passport control, we had people from Princess in the baggage area. They took us to the transfer. They took us to the hotel. They had their own private Princess concierge area where you would check in and schedule the transfer for the next day to the ship. So that was part of our pre stuff, but they literally were handholding us every single step of the way. It was amazing.
What is it like logistically going from LA to Copenhagen? Like, is it like a 12-hour flight?
It was long. Yeah, it was a little long. We actually went through British Airways and they were pretty decent. It was just a very long flight. I'm one of those people that can't really sleep well on flights. So when we arrived, I was like, okay, I don't want to necessarily take a nap because otherwise it's going to throw off my entire schedule and trying to get all that stuff in order. I would have a terrible time over the next couple of weeks while we were there. So it would just suck. Or not 2 weeks, but 11 days. So, yeah.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like when you get over there, your body just wants to go to sleep. Because, you know, like for me, I can't sleep on a plane either. So you want to go to sleep. But then next thing you know, you're going to sleep and you're waking up at 11 p.m. wide awake.
Exactly. And that became a problem when I was on the cruise itself. But I'll talk about the insomnia stuff as well. And some of the resources actually the ship had available to me in order to be able to help with that process.
Well, let's jump right to Regal Princess then. So how was embarkation in Copenhagen?
Embarkation was great. They took us from the hotel, Princess did, on a bus to get over to the docks. And it was probably at that point the most massive ship I'd ever seen up close. It, according to the statistics, I think it's supposed to have about a capacity for about 3,500 passengers, but it's 19 decks tall. It's massive. You come in, you go through the atrium. It's just the atrium on the Princess is split into two separate stairwells. And it's beautiful. The process itself actually didn't take more than, I would say, about 20 minutes once we actually got to the port. It was very well managed. There weren't really people that were stuck in line for any length of time. And it was a breeze. I was very impressed.
There's an intimidation factor with a lot of North Americans who are cruising out of Europe, you know, language barriers and all of that. Did you experience any language barriers, whether it be, you know, your transfer to the hotel or at the Copenhagen airport or during embarkation?
Not really so much. One of the gentlemen that was hired by Princess in the baggage area, he needed us to slow down our speaking a little bit. But for the most part, everybody spoke English very well. And people that were there working for Princess were actually, they were repatriated from England. They were repatriated from a number of places, from Germany, where, again, the native languages aren't just German or, you know, the native language of Dutch. It's also they were able to speak very, very fluently with multiple languages. And so it just made the transition and the embarkation process much smoother.
And you mentioned when you board the ship, you get into the atrium. So give us your first impressions of Regal Princess.
Stunning. It looked like you were getting into like almost the Ritz-Carlton or something like that. I mean, everything was bright, polished. There, as I said, there are two spiral stairwells that go down either side of the atrium that are both like crystalline, and you just, you know, it goes down all the floors. I'm used to the ships where you have one large stairwell that goes right down the center. This was a little different as far as that goes, but it helps to break up traffic too. And you notice that's a theme that they kind of do with a number of features in this ship, including the buffet, which I'll talk about in a little bit, where you don't just have the one group of things that go on. They actually split it up into multiple sections, and it just makes it for easier flow. So I think in terms of traffic, it was just a much smoother process, and it made for a much easier time.
I feel like that class of ship too. I mean, I've been on dozens of ships, and that has like the largest atrium I've ever been on.
It's stunning. It's huge. It's yeah. It and they have musicians that are in the atrium. Just in the days that we were on there, there was an opera singer. There was a cellist, quartet of people. There was an American girl who was playing a guitar and just singing, electric guitar actually. And it was really, really good. So, I mean, one thing I keep hearing from my colleagues and my friends who have gone or who are thinking in terms of what ship to go on, and they're a little reticent about going on to Princess Cruises because they think it's meant for only older travelers. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fallacy. I strongly disagree with that. This was a really fun cruise. I would easily take Princess again anytime. It was just such a wonderful experience. But yeah, getting back to the atrium, it was laid out really well. They also have something in the atrium which is kind of interesting besides your main help desk area and the stairwells and a bar. They actually have a place called the International Cafe, which was one of my favorite places on this ship. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And you don't just get like little sandwiches or stuff from there. You can get pretty much an entire spread of food. There's like one night at 3 a.m. in the morning, we got there and we were having like bow tie pasta and chocolate mousse and like, oh, we'll have a panini too and stuff like that. So, I mean, they had a pretty good spread just from that one little area on the atrium.
Awesome. So you make your way to the stateroom. What kind of stateroom did you book, and what did you think about it?
So our package came with a free balcony upgrade, and it was one of those that was like sold as it could be an obstructed balcony, but it wasn't. It was actually a really good upgrade. The room was lovely. Plenty of closet space. There was a ton of closet space available. It was a really nice motif. The colors were like lighter browns and mauves and stuff like that. So nothing really like in your face, like you would get from some of the younger ships where you might have like a bright purple or pink or crazy, you know, colors. Mm-hmm. It just made it much easier to sleep. And one other thing, the bed. Oh my gosh, Doug, I'm telling you, the bed in this place was amazing. It was like my bed from home. Awesome. I've been on other ones where it's almost like sleeping on a cot. Mm-hmm. In some cases, this was a full on king size bed. It was plush. The linens were amazing. It was fantastic. It made for a really good sleeping experience.
As far as the space in the cabin and the bathroom and everything like that?
Super. Mm-hmm. Just a very ample amount of space. We actually had more space than we knew what to do with.
That's always a good feeling. Let's talk about the dining on board the ship. And we'll start in the main dining room. So what time dining did you have, and how was it over the 11 nights?
So we had anytime dining, and when we initially got – this is a really good story. Okay, so when we initially got down there to the Symphony dining room, we met the person at the who kind of greets you on the first day, and while we were supposed to go to a different dining location, he said, oh, no, you can come in. Don't worry about it. And I sat down, and we had a pretty good experience on, and the first day we had everything from like mango sorbet to salmon, tiramisu. It was a really good experience. Then every other day after that, we would just go by, and I'm like, okay, well, the guy will probably remember us. And he's like, oh, my friends, welcome back. You know, how was your dinner the other night? And we were like, oh my gosh, this guy, like, he was sharp. He knew exactly what we looked like. He knew exactly where we sat. And like, the guy's not taking any notes or anything like that. And there are hundreds of people coming into this main dining hall every single day. And nonetheless, he's remembering us just from memory. And it made for an amazing experience. You know, he introduced us to the head waiter and the maitre d' and the person running the place, which led to us later actually getting reservations at the winemaker dinner, which is a enclosed area located directly in the symphony hall. But man, Doug, I'm telling you, some of the best food I have ever had was in this main dining hall. From nice. a chilled apple soup to a surf and turf with steak and prawns. I had like a chocolate lover's delight, which was a chocolate dessert that had a bunch of different things on it, to like baked goat cheese, to a collection of cakes one night, and ceviche and butternut squash soup, which was probably some of the best. And of course, you have to have your baked Alaska.
Oh, yeah. Now, let's talk about how was your experience in the Horizon Court? Of course, moving forward, it's going to be a little bit different than we're used to. But how was your experience while you were on board?
So I'm used to buffets being kind of like a racetrack, like a horse racetrack where you go once around the whole thing and that's pretty much it. I mean, that's how a lot of buffets are, depending on where you're going. This was very different for us. They had the buffet broken into about 8 different locations, all of which had different things to offer. So it made for an easier traffic flow. I really enjoyed it. They had a lot of really high-end luxury items in the buffet. So whether you're going there for breakfast or lunch, we didn't actually do dinner there because we were so amazed with the main dining hall that we couldn't not do that. The customer service, by the way, in every single one of the locations we went to, stunning, absolutely stunning. The only place that we had eaten that I wasn't just the biggest fan of, and that wasn't to say it was bad, was Sabatini's, which is the pizzeria that was there. And I didn't even have pizza. I think I had gnocchi or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I would say if I was going to give every one of these places a score out of a 10, I would have probably given the Horizon Court buffet probably around an 8 or a 9.
Wow.
The International Cafe definitely gets a 9. The Symphony Dining Hall would definitely get a 10. And then the winemaker's dinner location within the main dining hall, if I could give it higher than a 10, I would. Sabatini's probably about a 6 or 7.
One of my favorite areas of the Horizon Court is that bakery, because you can kind of sneak in there and people can't see you loading your plate up.
It was fantastic. Everything we had there was fresh. Everything was wonderful. They had a regular amount of stuff that came out on a regular basis. And you know, just the people in general, not just the staff, but even the people who were there, they weren't like butting in your way or doing anything. And it seemed like the staff was helping to manage the customer flow very easily. So when you had people that were clustering in an area, you would have a member of the staff come over and say, oh, we have this over here as well. You know, come on over here. And it was very inviting.
Talk to us about the specialty dining.
So over at Sabatini's, we made reservations. I wanted to give it a try because I had heard so many wonderful things about it. But when we got there, you know, we were the only ones in the place. We usually tend to eat relatively early if we can. And so we got into there and, you know, my husband had a pizza. I opted for the gnocchi, and the portion sizes were smaller than I would have liked. And they didn't taste as good as the stuff I was getting in the Symphony or even in the Horizon Court. So for me, that was kind of a little bit of a miss, but was it better than things I get back here in the States? Oh, heck yeah. Absolutely.
Nice. Now, did you do the Crown Grill?
We did not do the Crown Grill, no.
And how about during, I know Princess does that, what is it, like a fish and chips type lunch on some sea days? Did you do that?
We did not. We were, if we were awake for lunch, we sometimes had it with our shore excursions that we had in some places.
Did we cover all of the food? Because I know 11 nights is a long time and there's a lot of food on board.
Well, the one thing I do want to highlight for any of your listeners who are interested in whether or not to spend money to actually do the winemaker's dinner with a lot of people, it is hands down, the only word I can think of for using it is magical. Okay. This was our anniversary dinner. We had met a bunch of people up on the smoker's deck because my husband at the time was a smoker. And so we had asked them if they wanted to join us. It was about $35 per person to do this. So obviously it doesn't come with your your normal purchase. But man, okay, just to give you an idea, it's a 4-course meal, and every single one of the courses is served with a glass of wine. The starter was like a shrimp starter. The first course was like a beef and potatoes. Our main course was probably the biggest filet I had ever had in my life, topped with foie gras. And then for dessert, they gave me an apricot Napoleon. Nice. But beyond that, somehow, because we didn't say it was our anniversary, somehow they figured it out. And no one in our party had mentioned that it was our anniversary. They figured it out. They brought us a second dessert on top of that with a bottle of wine and gave us all a limoncello, which I mistakenly thought was a shot. So three of those later, and I am ready to go for the night.
Well, you can shoot those, though. I mean, they're approachable. You can down one.
Doug, I'm much smaller than you, so my alcohol tolerance is little to none. I'm not like Tommy over at Always Be Booked. So yeah. I'm suffering from this at that point. But no, it was fantastic. It was a really wonderful dinner. I highly recommend it to anybody.
Nice. Now, let's talk about the entertainment on this 11-night cruise. What did you think of it?
So we did not have any tickets for any shows. Majority of our time was spent conversing and socializing with people. So our main entertainment was shopping during this time. So they had a lot of really interesting things that were going on. We did actually go to a couple of information sessions about some of the ports that we were going to. And so in terms of getting knowledge and that information, I'm a professor. So one of the things I like to do is I like to sit down and get more information about the places I go. So that to me was time well spent. And in fact, some of those things were tied into discounts over at their shops and things like that, which was great. But seeing, for example, one of our shops is going to be St. Petersburg, and seeing someone actually making one of these nesting dolls on the ship, they actually brought an artisan on the ship in order to be able to show you how this was done, and also how to recognize fakes when you get to the port eventually, was really, I think, very helpful. But as far as additional entertainment, they had the atrium musicians, and they had a bunch of musicians strategically placed throughout the ship at various different points that you would get either off the elevators or at the atrium or on the open deck area. It was smart. It was really clever the way that they maneuver that. So even if you didn't take advantage of the shows and the open entertainment or anything like that, there was still ample entertainment all around the ship.
What was the casino like as far as the smoke situation in and around?
So the casino on this ship is located just below the main shopping area. Mm-hmm. I remember going there only once during the entire trip, which is kind of weird because I'm normally a gambler. My husband was there definitely later on in the evenings, but it's difficult for me to gauge smoke because I'm so used to him having been a smoker. So for me, it was definitely tolerable. There wasn't anything that I was getting as far as residual above the area, but I only went into the casino, I think, once, and it really wasn't that big of a deal for me.
You mentioned that you were downing limoncello. Did you have the drink package?
We did. Okay. It came with a basic drink package, which was part of the whole thing. We normally had the wine and beer, and that was totally available to us. But getting the limoncello and things like that, you pay a little bit of a premium for. Or my husband drinks whiskey, so that's another thing too. And then on one of the days, one of the at sea days, I actually opted to go for a wine tasting, which was 6 glasses of wine, mm-hmm. 3 red, 3 white, for $35 per person. No big deal there. And then high tea as well, which were not covered under the drink package, but both of those were a lot of fun.
Wow, very nice. Now, speaking of sea days, how were they as far as crowds and congestion?
Great. Yeah, everybody seemed to have their own agenda on the sea days. There wasn't a lot of crowding. I want to say maybe one time during one of the days, there was a little bit of congestion in the atrium area. But apart from that, I mean, like, we spent one sea day. I did the wine tasting. My husband went to the salon and did his thing. Second sea day, we did high tea. I wanted to experience that for the first time, and that was amazing. And then the third sea day, we both opted for like a couple's massage, which was really kind of cool.
Very
it was just
cool.
Easy after that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about your ports of call. Give us a port of call and then a highlight from that port, and then go to the next one.
Absolutely. So our first port after leaving Copenhagen was Oslo. And Oslo is really great for if you enjoy nature a lot. They have beautiful fjords to be able to see. We actually had a couple of highlights there. We went to a like a glass blowing exhibit while we were there. And probably one of the funnest things for me, at least, was going to a Viking ship museum where we could see that some recent artifacts that they had dug up and gotten to see those in person. So that was kind of neat. After that, we went to the next port of call, which was Rostock, which is in the former East Germany province. There, we had an opportunity to go to Sverren Lake and Castle, as well as St. Mary's Cathedral. Sverren Lake and Castle is one of the many influences that Walt Disney did, that he got when he was building Sleeping Beauty's castle for Disneyland and Disney World and that type of thing. He got a lot of influence from a lot of places in Europe and many of them German castles. But even before we even went on the ship, one of the places that we know that he got some influence from was the gardens over in Copenhagen, Tivoli Gardens, where they actually have, it's basically a Hans Christian Andersen inspired different theme park. And it's really kind of cool. We enjoyed that. Then our next port of call after Rostock was Tallinn, which is in Estonia. There we had an opportunity to go to Old Town Tallinn, which is up on a hillside area where the religion is a lot more Orthodox. And then we had the opportunity to go to Kodryog, which is Peter the Great's summer palace. And that is decked out. And man, I got to tell you, it's gorgeous. It's not the one that a lot of people think about because that one's coming up. We did that one when we went to St. Petersburg. Mm-hmm. But it's still got the bright colors that influenced a lot of Peter's inspirations. For those of your viewers who don't know the history, Peter the Great was one of these czars that came from Russia, went to all the way to France and got a lot of his inspiration from the Palace of Versailles, but he himself was actually an architect. So he took part in helping to build his summer palace there in Kadriog, which you can actually see, they'll show you a cornerstone of where Peter the Great actually, you know, helped to construct his own palace by hand. And then, we had a 2-day stay in St. Petersburg, Russia. Now this was amazing. I had never done a 2-day excursion. And by the way, little pro tip for your listeners out there, please don't ever wash your passport. Take it out of your pants. We had a little bit of a challenge when getting into Russia that almost scared the living hell out of my husband. Apart from that, while we were there, on day one, we had the front of the line tickets for the Hermitage Museum, which was spectacular. We also went to the Church of the Resurrection, which is also known as the Church of the Spilled Blood. Probably one of my favorite places on the face of the earth. One of the best religious places I've ever been. This place, when you normally go to churches and cathedrals throughout the world, you'll see tapestries and paintings and things like that. In a climate like Russia, it's very difficult to do that because that stuff decays really rapidly. But with this specific church, the way they had it set up was all of their artwork was done up in tile work and mosaics and with like silver candelabras and things like that. So it was just stunning to look at. We also went to St. Isaac's Cathedral and the Cathedral of St. Peter and Paul's and had a really good meal there while we were over in that area. Then on day two, we went to the big one, which is Peterhof Palace. That's the one where you'll see the gardens that are done up in like gold fountains and things like that when you go to Russia. Mm-hmm. It was incredible. We also did a canal cruise of the River Neva while we were there. We also went to the Yusupov Palace, which is an inner city palace where we were treated to an impromptu tenor group that came on and sang for the entire place. That's, by the way, the location where Rasputin was assassinated. So that was an interesting historical moment. And then we went to a historically traditional Russian restaurant called Troika, where we got to see an actual musical performance from people in historical Russian garb. And it was an amazing opportunity. So that was Russia. Then we went the next day to Helsinki, Finland. And this is where we had a wonderful time. It was a very different feel from Russia. We went to the town of Porvo, which I packed my backpack with a bunch of candy I bought there, mm-hmm. which was amazing. We also went to a plantation house in order to have lunch. They treated us to lunch there. We also got to see dressage horses doing exercise there, which was really kind of cool, and to see them do laps. And then we went to a place in Helsinki, which was a modern church called the Church of the Rock, which is very fascinating. It's very contemporary looking, but it's built out of the husk of a one large granite boulder that has been carved out. Okay. So it's definitely earthquake proof. That's not a problem, but it's incredible. And then finally, our last location that we stopped in with their ship was Stockholm, Sweden. And there we had a chance to go to the city hall. We went to the Vasa Museum, which is a sunken ship that was off of the harbor of Stockholm for many years that they finally brought up and put back together. It's stunning. And then finally, we went to the Royal Palace while we were in Stockholm as well. So those were all of the different ports we went to. Just a great cultural experience.
I want you to go back to St. Petersburg and tell us the passport story.
Okay, so here's the story. So my husband and I are going through passport control because with Russia, and if you're coming on a ship, you have a limited visa. You can be there for 24 hours if you go through that channel. So I get through passport within like 5 minutes. The lady looks at my passport, no problem. I move on. So I'm waiting for him to go through, and she's looking at his passport, and she's looking him up and down. And then she looks at his passport again, and then she makes a call, and she's speaking in total Russian. So we have no idea what's going on because, again, language barrier. And so out of nowhere comes her, what we assume is to be supervisor, wearing a Russian military outfit with a automatic weapon at his side. And my husband's like, looks at me with his eyes wide open. He's like, oh my God, I am going to die here. They're going to find my body in here. So the guy literally takes out a magnifying glass from his coat, looks at the passport very much, and was like looking my husband up and down, and finally waves him on. And then my husband comes out of that, and he's like, I need a smoke in a bathroom, and not necessarily in that order. I just need to go right now. So that was the whole thing. So again, to your viewers, please take very good care of your passport. If it needs to be replaced, please replace it to avoid any of these things. Second day coming back on the second day of the St. Petersburg stuff, we had an opportunity. We just presented them with a visa, and that was very easy to go through the second day. But the first day, he almost had a heart attack.
So you make your way back to Copenhagen. How was disembarkation?
Disembarkation was very good. It took us about 30 minutes to get off total. They immediately ushered us onto transport, which took us directly to the airport. And that was it. It was a very, very fast disembarkation process. Very smooth, nothing wrong. Our biggest wait was actually at the airport, where it took about 4 hours before my flight. If I have any qualms, it was just because it was so efficient. We had so much time to wait at the airport.
Do you have any first time tips to offer anyone sailing the Baltic or Regal Princess?
Absolutely. Well, first off, I want to say Princess is extraordinary in every way. I mean, from the room attendants, the staff at the gym, making sure like at 1 o'clock in the morning, I had ample towels and the gym equipment was clean. The MDR staff was fantastic. I have never been on a cruise with better customer service. One other thing, and this is primarily geared towards your listeners who are smokers, and sometimes they get kind of that weird rap where they're kind of ushered into like a side area and, you know, you smoke outside and that's it. The way that Princess had it on this ship was very interesting. They put all of the smoker sections together in the, I think it was deck 17 at the aft of the ship, and they had the place had ample chairs for a number of people, because again, smoking is more of a social activity. So you'll have a lot of people that congregate to that area. Now there is a place on the inside where they have like a cigar lounge that's enclosed, but on the outside, this gives people a view, even if it's the aft of the ship. It's attended by a person who can come from the bar, which is a deck below. They regularly clean the ashtrays. They maintain water, coffee, and tea for everybody on that area. It made it for a really luxurious experience. So I think really what I'm trying to say is, customer service-wise, they knew what they were doing, and it really was incredibly stunning. I was very impressed. I would say, again, take pictures of your passports ahead of time, just in case for whatever reason something gets lost. There was a concern that there might be some pickpockets in St. Petersburg, so we wanted to make sure that we were prepared for that. And again, really, really important, because this is something I did hear that happened there. Do not let other people touch your camera unless you're comfortable with them. If someone on the street wants to take a picture of you, again, be cautious of something like that. They could end up running off with your camera. Or on the flip side, if someone gives you a camera to say, hey, take a picture of me, and oh, guess what? The camera's broken. Now they want you to pay for a new camera phone. So it's like, Oh man, you know, but that happened to I think someone on the ship. But apart from our trip, the ship itself was amazing. The customer service was amazing. The food was incredible, and surprisingly, you walk it off a lot. So we actually came back and lost weight. So I was impressed
nice.
With that.
Okay, yeah, like that. Looking back, what was the biggest highlight of this cruise?
Oh my gosh, the MDR and the food selection was just beyond. I mean, don't get me wrong, the itinerary was very, very good and I enjoyed it, but the exemplary customer service, I have a thing about customer service. I have been in part of customer service for many, many, many years, and I enjoy it. With many ships, they try to do either the nickel and dime thing or the hard upsells a lot of the time. It didn't feel like on this ship there was that. They maybe asked you if you want to do something once, and if the answer was no, they didn't bother you from that point moving forward. It was just a real delight as far as that went.
Okay, very good. Kind of a bonus question here, Scott. What's the thing you miss the most about cruising?
Oh, man, I knew you were going to ask me something like that. So we actually had a cruise that was planned earlier for this year on the Vision of the Seas in the Caribbean, because we haven't actually been on any cruise to the Caribbean yet. Mm-hmm. I think just the ability to get away, the ability to breathe in the ocean air, to be pampered. I know Richard Sims made mention of this, I think, a little while ago on your show. You know, when he goes on a cruise, he just likes to make sure that he's having the best time of his life and, you know, let people pamper him and take care of him. I agree. I'm kind of the same way too. I like that there are ships that are geared for pretty much any kind of activity that you want, whether it's you're with the kids and you're doing the, you know, water park or the roller coasters or whatever the case may be. But for me, I just like to be able to enjoy myself, relax, but I want to get away from my house. And I think this is one of those things where I got so far away from my house. This was a great opportunity for me to just experience new culture, great food, extraordinary customer service. The whole experience is just spectacular.
When you were talking about how during the shows, when they were going on, you were kind of just socializing and shopping and everything, it made me think, like, that's the one thing I really miss about cruising right now is just talking to people during that time of night.
Mm-hmm. I think I agree with you. Yeah. And we actually made some extraordinary friends. I know that I've heard other people talk about it in the cruising community where, you know, you've gone on a cruise once and you make those friends almost for life. And like all my friends that I have in cruising are either people I've met on cruises or people I've met through various different podcasting, especially mm-hmm. my podcast. And so, I mean, in terms of that, I really enjoy the camaraderie that we get, the tips and tricks that we get whenever we travel. It just makes it a much smoother experience, I think, for everybody, because we all learn from each other's mistakes, but we also learn from the best practices as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, definitely. Final thoughts of Regal Princess.
I would definitely take the ship again. If someone said the Regal Princess was docked in Long Beach over here in California, I would jump on it, because I'm telling you, it's got that big feel, but it's not overwhelming. It's mm-hmm. got the customer service where you know you're being taken care of. And I got to tell you, man, Doug, it's really enjoyable when you find a ship that you really, really like and it resonates with you.
Yeah.
We've gone on several cruises and I don't think I have experienced anything like the best service I've ever had. And it came from Princess. And so I was just floored. Again, the quality of the food, the quality of the staff, they really did. Oh, one other thing I forgot to mention, after our anniversary dinner, when we came back to the room, the staff had decorated our room when we came back to say happy anniversary. Nice. And again, we didn't tell anybody that. It's those little things that really make for this just spectacular experience. I hope every single one of your listeners gets the opportunity to enjoy that level of quality and experience.
You just mentioned that you had a podcast. Where can we find that?
Oh, yeah. You can either find my podcast or you can find me on YouTube at The Professor Travel. I'm available at either location.
Scott, thank you so much for stopping by and giving us this review of Regal Princess. I sure appreciate it, my friend.
Oh, no problem, Doug. Anytime. You take care, man.
All right, Dougie. Let's see what we got here, buddy. Ba-ba-ba-da-ba-da. Cruise Radio is produced weekly in Jacksonville, Florida. For partnership opportunities, email Doug at cruiseradio.net. Hear Cruise Radio on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, the Stitcher Radio Network, Google Play, or at cruiseradio.net. I'm your announcer.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.